Welcome to the Payments Podcast, where we talk to innovators about how they're reinventing, reimagining, and recreating the payments ecosystem.
Hi, this is Eileen Good for Payments.com. I'm talking to John McDonald, the Chief Executive Officer and co-founder of BitNet Technologies. John, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, my pleasure, Eileen. Thanks for having me.
So BitNet is a new entrant into the Bitcoin processing arena. What makes you different from others that are in the same space processing Bitcoin payments?
Yeah, that's right. So it's a, you know, relatively new arena, as are most things related to Bitcoin. And I think our key differentiators as we look across the nascent competitive landscape is that we've done this before. We've built the team at BitNet comes primarily from, I say primarily, entirely from CyberSource, with a couple exceptions. And we built the world's biggest payment gateway to help process credit cards. It was a merchant-centric business that we sold to Visa about 4 years ago. And today, CyberSource processes over 400,000 processes payments for over 400,000 merchants. So I think that at the top of the list in terms of differentiators is our domain expertise, the fact that we are bringing to the Bitcoin ecosystem literally decades of payment processing experience, and specifically trying to make legacy payment types such as credit cards and bank transfers work on the internet. So we have a lot of experience in trying to make payments that were never designed to work over the internet do so, and then to manage a lot of the risk and fraud considerations that were attended with that effort. We see with Bitcoin a tectonic shift in technology, in the sense that the internet now has been turned into a secure payment system. So taking what we have learned from trying to make credit cards work on the internet and realizing what merchants want and need and expect from a payment processor, I think we're coming into the market with a very unique and differentiated value proposition, okay? And specifically, what we are aiming to deliver is a suite of payment processing services that can be accessed through a simple API integration, very much like what we did at our previous company. But with Bitcoin, because there are no bank intermediaries, that suite of services is different. And I think the primary difference is that the shift in liability under the card-not-present rules of the payment network operating regulations has gone away, so that the merchants are no longer liable for a bad card transaction as they are with credit cards. To the contrary, Bitcoin is digital cash, right? So the advantage to the merchants is clear and significant, in the sense that the Bitcoin protocol eliminates the fraud that merchants have historically been left with, right? If a merchant takes a card online and that card turns out to have been stolen, the merchant is left holding the bag. With Bitcoin, the opposite is true. The merchant gets good funds in a cash equivalent. However, because there are no bank intermediaries, there are other services that will need to be introduced to what was formerly a four-party model with a cardholder and a merchant on the opposite ends of the model, with a merchant acquiring bank and a card issuing bank as intermediaries. Bitcoin has been designed as a two-party model. And in the simplest transaction example, sender A sends Bitcoin to sender B over the internet, and there is no need for an intermediary. With large-scale, enterprise-grade e-commerce businesses, oftentimes the sender not be familiar with the receiver, right, or may not have a pre-existing trusted relationship and may not be comfortable sending what is the equivalent of digital cash through to the receiver. So as one example of a service that we believe will be required for large-scale acceptance of Bitcoin by enterprise-level retailers is a trusted mediation service, right? So analogous to a chargeback or the ability of a consumer to charge back a transaction, but in the context of Bitcoin, the protocol has enabled the ability for a smart contract, okay, multi-signature contract to be created and executed between the sender and the receiver. And this may sound more complicated than it is, but in essence, the analogy is an escrow, okay, where the consumer sends Bitcoin to purchase something. Let's say it's an expensive watch from a retailer with whom they have not yet done business. The retailer sends the watch, and the Bitcoin is, in essence, sent to BitNet as the intermediary. BitNet holds the Bitcoin in escrow, okay, on account for the sender. When a predetermined action takes place, in this case, likely the transmission or the delivery of the watch to the consumer, a release is affected, and BitNet will release the value to the merchant, and this is called a 2-of-3 multi-sig transaction. And again, one of the advantages of Bitcoin is that it's automated, right? There is no further action necessary by either the sender or the receiver. BitNet can stand in the middle, and when two of the three parties to the transaction authorize its completion, then BitNet is able to release the funds. So that just gives you a sense of some of the services that need to be introduced in a Bitcoin context, in a Bitcoin transaction, to replicate some of the protections and some of the expectations that consumers have come to anticipate from e-commerce transactions. Specifically, as we look around the landscape, you know, we don't see yet the level of service that we believe will be necessary for, again, you know, large, multinational, you know, industrial-grade commerce to be conducted between consumers and merchants. In this regard, you know, we are targeting the biggest of the big retailers, the hospitality chains, the airlines, you know, merchants that do, you know, millions and millions of dollars worth of transactions a day, and likewise have come to expect scalable, reliable, you know, industrial grade processing capabilities from their service providers. And in our discussions with these retailers, we have come up with a suite of services that, again, we don't feel exists yet, and our sense has been confirmed by these discussions with retailers. BitNet will guarantee the price that a retailer charges on their website. So if a airline, for instance, is charging $500 for an airline ticket, BitNet will enable the consumer to send $500 worth of Bitcoin to BitNet on behalf of the airline. BitNet will then exchange that Bitcoin for fiat currency. In the case of airlines, typically they want USD, no matter where they're based. BitNet will absorb all of the risk of price volatility and the risk of, frankly, handling the Bitcoin. And there is some risk inherent with that, since it is digital cash. That's a consideration that merchants have taken into account, in the sense that they are not necessarily comfortable at this point taking Bitcoin in kind, right? Meaning actually accepting the Bitcoin and holding on to it in lieu of the fiat currency, and many merchants express concern over actually the handling of Bitcoin, right? They're just not yet set up to accept and store Bitcoin. There are some exceptions, but I think what we have determined thus far with our discussions with retailers, most of them see Bitcoin as a payment system, not really as a currency, with that distinction meaning they just want traditional currency, so-called fiat currency, U.S. dollars, British pounds, yen, euro, etc. Until the Bitcoin price volatility diminishes to a degree, until suppliers are willing to accept Bitcoin, until retailers can make payroll in Bitcoin, most of them just want cash. They want dollars. So a key component, we believe, of our value proposition is this guaranteed payment commitment that if an airline wants to collect $500 for an airline ticket, by accepting Bitcoin, they will get their $500 net of our processing fee. So we'll insulate them from both the price volatility as well as the risk of actually handling Bitcoin, so that, you know, the merchant actually doesn't have to touch the Bitcoin if they don't want to. And some merchants actually do want to accept some portion of the payment in Bitcoin to build a Bitcoin reserve. I spoke earlier about the consumer protection. That's, I think, an important component to build confidence amongst consumers to shop and pay using Bitcoin. And, you know, this is, I think, specifically a differentiator of BitNet versus other solutions, but I think it warrants mentioning that chargebacks go away, right? With our service and likely with any service that's processing Bitcoin, merchant chargebacks are history. There's no need to have on staff dedicated FTEs to manage chargebacks or disputes or fraud, right? To actually manage the risk of taking cards. And that's a significant cost, right? In addition to the cost savings from the actual processing fee, I think it perhaps as significant or maybe even greater implied cost, the so-called sort of total cost of ownership of accepting cards online, is building and maintaining the staff, the in-house personnel, to manage chargebacks. And that's a large and growing problem. And I think, you know, merchants and consumers alike are paying through the, you know, prices passed along to the consumers for this fraud. We're all sharing in the cost of this fraud, and Bitcoin eliminates that.
Okay, so obviously there's a lot of benefits here, especially for merchants to sort of using Bitcoin. You know, there's a lot of things that are costing them money, time, and difficulty right now. But do merchants know that? I mean, are you seeing demand among merchants that, you know, what they want is to accept Bitcoin, that this is even something that interests them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we have been pleasantly surprised, okay, in our discussions. I think a lot more attention has been spent focusing on Bitcoin acceptance than most casual observers might anticipate. There has been, you know, a decent amount of publicity around some of the early adopters, over stock.com, probably being the most transparent in the sense that Pat Byrne, their CEO, has been very proactive about sharing the data and the benefits, right, that Overstock has realized from accepting Bitcoin. I think that's been very helpful. I think that there still is a missionary sale element to this, in the sense that there's an educational curve often that we need to engage in with the retailer to help them become familiar with some of the nuances. A typical conversation, you know, might go as follows. Are you interested in taking Bitcoin? What about the volatility? Well, we manage that, right? What about someone stealing Bitcoin? Do we guarantee payment against that? Okay. What about the processing cost? That's the best part, right? It's a third or less than what you're paying for cards, and there's no fraud, right? And once you get through sort of a interactive 3 or 4 question Q&A, such as that, the discussion turns to, that sounds great, right? What do we need to do, right? And I think that's, again, where, you know, business domain expertise provides a compelling competitive advantage, because we know exactly what happens from there, right? The payment, especially for large retailers, is really just the first component of a commerce transaction, right? There's a whole litany of other considerations, integrations into the merchant's commerce platform, ERP systems, accounting, tax collections, fulfillment, etc. So, we have been pleasantly surprised, again, at the level of knowledge at some of the big retailers, and I think that there is a lot of pent-up demand by large retailers to accept Bitcoin, and frankly, I think that a lot of them have been on the sideline waiting for a solution provider like Bitnet to come to market with the services that we are offering.
All right, and now let's talk about the other side of the coin, which is consumers. I think insofar as consumers are aware of Bitcoin, they probably have a mixed, you know, opinion of it just because of the way Bitcoin is covered. So are you seeing consumers who are looking to pay for things in Bitcoin just because, you know, through now, I would say it's kind of a niche product. It appeals to a very certain group of you know, currency users.
And I think that with any new technology, right, we're going to go through a similar adoption curve where, in this case, it's, you know, a certain specific demographic of, you know, tech savvy. A lot of Bitcoin holders now have mined the Bitcoin, right? Meaning they've actually created the Bitcoin through operating a node on the Bitcoin network. I think that the publicity around Bitcoin, for better or for worse, has raised the awareness, at least of its existence, and has triggered a certain degree of curiosity and investigation by a broader segment of the consumer population. And the numbers are growing. If you know, with blockchain, that info, and Coinbase, and other wallet providers publish their adoption rates periodically, and we are in the millions of wallets. And I think that, you know, the acceptance infrastructure to date has perhaps been a bit of a hindrance to the ability to spend Bitcoin. I think a lot of the activity has been speculation, people buying Bitcoin as a financial instrument in the hopes that it will appreciate in value. And, you know, we believe that that's warranted, but that ultimately that value is only going to be realized with a more robust acceptance infrastructure. And we believe that, you know, we're a component of that, right? Of some, you know, seasoned veterans from the payments industry that are entering the market to help grease the skids, so to speak, right? To help consumers to spend the Bitcoin that they have perhaps owned and it's perhaps appreciated, or maybe they even mined it, so the basis is null. But I think, again, some of the data from some of these early adopters indicates that consumers have Bitcoin and they want to spend their Bitcoin. And you know, so far it's early days, but the you know, the advantages of using Bitcoin versus other payment types is an open question, right? I mean, I think an often heard observation about Bitcoin is in the developed economies, you know, we've got cards, we've got bank accounts, we can do bank transfers, which is the predominant form of e-commerce payment in Europe. In the U.S., it's still card-based, but you know, most consumers have access to, you know, the financial system. And so why would a consumer want to use Bitcoin in lieu of a card? And I think, you know, the answer in the developed economies is probably going to be different than the answer in the developing economies, the growing middle class, say, India, South America, integration with using cards online, and they're exposing your card details online, where your the cards can be stolen. It can be stored in a place where they're then hacked. That can lead to problems with identity theft. And unfortunately, I think that that's a shared problem. I mean, that's an issue for merchants, clearly. They're the ones left holding the bag when those cards are reused. But for consumers, there's collateral damage from that, right? There's the need to buy personal identification, fraud protection, on a monthly subscription to make sure that your cards aren't being used and your identity is not being stolen and your credit report rating is not being harmed. A lot of the issues with using cards online extend to consumers, some indirect and some, in more oblique ways. But again, we're all paying for this. We're all paying for the continued massive breaches of cards and the increasing sophistication of the fraud rings that package and resell these cards on the black market. And I think there is a bit of an awakening that, again, is being led by a specific kind of sub-segment of the consumer market that is currently spending Bitcoin. That's growing. And I think that, when prices start to come down, and I think, merchants may have a motivation to run Bitcoin specials, as Tiger Direct has started to do, and some others, motivate users to use Bitcoin. I think there's a virtuous cycle that has started, that's in motion. And, consumers in developed countries are perhaps for slightly different reasons than the developing countries, the developing economies, are motivated and will be motivated to continue to, spend Bitcoin for transactions. And I think that once some of the acceptance infrastructure, accelerates in its development, it's going to be pretty easy to use your Bitcoin at physical retail. It's going to be probably as easy or easier than using a credit card, and certainly easier than using some kind of bank transfer. And I think one of the things that has caught us by surprise, given the compelling, value prop for accepting Bitcoin online, right, in the sense of eliminating the cost of fraud, we suspected that most of the merchant interest was going to be focused on online, transactions, right, to replace card-not-present transactions. What we have found is that there's an equal amount of demand by retailers to accept Bitcoin in store, where presumably that is not as much of the motivation, right, since under the operating regs, if you capture the card, track your data on the magnetic card in a U.S. transaction or the PIN, a chip and PIN EMV transaction, they're not held liable for any fraud. So in an in-store retail transaction, the merchant is clearly focused on something else, which likely is the reduced cost of the transaction, which is compelling. Interchange transaction of 250 basis points under our model, is sub 100 basis points, right? So it's a third of what they're paying. But our suspicion is that some of these early adopter retailers are also focused on the demographic of consumers who are currently holding and spending Bitcoin. I know that Overstock has shared some data that says, I think 50 or 60% of the purchases made on their website using Bitcoin are coming from new customers. And, that's a golden metric for any retailer is new customer acquisition. Bitcoin is giving retailers the ability to tap into a new, generally younger demographic. And that's important to them. Another key performance indicator that has come out from some of your early adopters is that the average per ticket size is higher by 30 to 40%. card transaction. So, I think there's clear, and compelling data to indicate that consumers have Bitcoin and they want to spend it. And I think that, again, as the acceptance infrastructure improves, that's going to accelerate.
All right. So, while it's taking time, what is your business model? How do you make money bringing Bitcoin to the masses?
Yeah, so for us, it's pretty straightforward. We are pure and simple Bitcoin processor. We're not a wallet provider. We're not an exchange. We don't do anything but act as an agent for the merchant to accept Bitcoin on behalf of the merchant. And if the merchant so desires to liquidate the Bitcoin on exchange and deliver currency to the merchant. So our revenue model is to charge the merchant a sub 100 basis point processing fee. So in the example I cited earlier where an airline is charging $500 for an airline ticket, we will present in real time an offer the consumer to convert the $500 into the Bitcoin equivalent at that point in time. We will then accept the Bitcoin, process it on behalf of the merchant, and then remit to the merchant the $500 net of our processing fee. And that's the source of our revenue.
All right. And last question, and you've certainly touched on this throughout our conversation, but if you kind of had to sum it all up, as you pointed out, especially in the developed world, people already have options. American consumers have cards, Europeans are using bank transfers, but Bitcoin isn't filling a need people have. But you seem to think it's providing a better option. So at the end of the day, why are Bitcoin and your processing rails, better than the options consumers are looking at right now?
Yeah, so, I think that the answer is likely enlightenment, right? And I'm not trying to be cheeky with that answer, but I think that there's a growing awareness that credit cards simply were not designed to work on the internet. And as a result, there's a huge and growing amount of costs, primarily due to fraud. And it's over $1 billion easily. We know we're paying for that. Okay, consumers know that, we read the papers, we see the battles on Capitol Hill that result in things like the Durbin Amendment, the caps, interchange fees. We can read about the Walmart multi-district litigation efforts to, reduce interchange. We see the battles that merchants are waging. We hear the data that merchants share that card processing costs are often second or third largest expense line item behind rent and payroll. And we know we're paying for that. I think that, one of the benefits of the internet going back a couple of decades is the free dissemination of information, right? And you can, determine what you should rely on and believe, but most of us have become pretty adept at that and finding trustworthy sources of information to form our own opinion, and that's been great. We now have access to a lot of data. I think that the fact that now the public internet has also become a secure payment network is a natural evolution of that, in the sense that data can now not only be disseminated, but it can be trusted. And in this regard, trusted as a form of value, and that will extend into other types of commerce through this smart system. Some of the smart contract components of the protocol that I mentioned earlier in the 203 multi-signature escrow arrangement. But I just feel that consumers are waking up to the fact that credit cards and bank transfers, these were never meant as payment instruments to conduct internet transactions. Bitcoin is. It was designed from the ground up to do just that and eliminate a lot of the friction, a lot of the costs, and all of the intermediaries from these transactions. And those savings are going to be passed along to us, the consumers, right? I mean, you know, and that's a recurring theme with some of the battles on Capitol Hill and the federal courtrooms, is that if the regulators and lawmakers will help the merchants in this struggle against duopolistic payment networks that set prices, you know, sort of unilaterally and pass them through to merchants, I think that the awareness is that we're paying for that. We as consumers are paying for that. And there's a better way. There's a better way to pay, and that's with Bitcoin.
All right. Well, John, thank you so much for talking to us today.
Oh, my pleasure, Eileen. Yeah, and thanks for your time. I really appreciate it, and I look forward to speaking with you again soon.
I say you'll keep us posted on your progress and let us now know how consumers and merchants are taking to the platform.
Absolutely.
Terrific. Thanks very much.
Okay, sure. Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye. Bye.